Bet.
From KCRW, this is Here Be Monsters. I'm Jeff Entman, and as you might notice, I'm recovering from a little bit of a cold right now. I think I got it while I was traveling. It's been that time of year. I've been taking planes and trains and cars across lots of parts of the country, and I appear to have picked up something along the way. And I'm kind of recording now through a couple layers of cough drops and store brand Dayquil. But that first thing, the thing about planes and trains and cars, that's actually been a long-term goal of mine, to be able to produce this show a little bit more nimbly, a little bit more on my feet, not sweat the small stuff quite so much. One thing that's been really helpful in that process, actually, is my girlfriend gave me this little pocket-sized sampler where I can sample little tidbits of the world around me as I travel.
As I travel.
And that's good. It's good for me to switch up the workflow a little bit. I used to go to Boy Scout camp as a kid. We'd wait for the summer nights when there were no clouds and no moon. They'd take us on this trail up the hillside, and we'd all lie on our backs in this pasture full of cow pies, and they would tell us the names of the stars and where to find them and the stories behind the stars. And I liked this. I mean, it was arbitrary, of course, like, why is Cassiopeia shaped like a W? It doesn't really make sense, but I got it. But they also told me that there were planets up there that I could see. Jupiter, Venus, Mars, and I would squint through my glasses thinking that they all could see something that I couldn't. It all just looked like dots to me. They said Saturn was up there, but every kid knows that Saturn is huge and has rings. Where were the rings? I eventually decided that my vision was fine and that they were just making it up. I moved to Colorado after college. It was a touristy city, so there were a lot of buskers. All the expected types, bucket drummers, jugglers, the occasional harpist. And there was one guy who came out on the clear nights with a giant telescope, and he would set it up there on the sidewalk, and he would invite people to come look through it. One night, as I was walking home, he asked me, "Have you ever seen Saturn before?" And I told him I wasn't sure. He invited me over, and I looked through the telescope, and for the first time in my life, I saw the thing that the Boy Scouts had always told me was there. It was fuzzy and dim, but it had rings. It definitely had rings. I dropped a dollar in his bucket. Turns out Saturn is real. Okay, cool story, Jeff, but why are you telling me about Saturn? Well, it's because I've just turned 30, and much like a younger version of me, shivering in a cow pasture, staring at dots in the sky trying to find Saturn, I think that turning 30 is kind of bullshit. And it's not like one of those things where I'm upset by the seemingly premature decay of my body, or the fact that I can't remember anyone's name. These are things that have already been true for at least half my life. The reason I'm upset about 30 specifically is that it's a round number. And that round number has forced me to arbitrarily reflect on my life in ways that I didn't do last year, and I certainly won't do next. Numbers, no matter how useful they are just inventions. Zero didn't always exist, and negative numbers have only been around for a couple thousand years. The ratio pi is significantly older, but that's probably because you can calculate pi pretty easily with a piece of string and a wheel. One ancient Babylonian tablet calculated pi to be 3.125, which is actually pretty close. But that's nothing compared to me in ninth grade when I used to spend math class ignoring my teacher and staring at a big poster of pi's digits hung up on the wall. 3.14159265358979323854. Fuck. Of course, the numbers go on forever. It's an irrational number. It has infinite decimal places. And that's fine, but infinity has its own can of worms that's been fought over for eons, both in academia and at the swing sets at my elementary school. And we've invented plenty of other weird numbers too, like Euler's constant, Graham's number, and the imaginary number I. The number I is the square root of negative 1, which doesn't exist. That's why it's called an imaginary number. It represents the exact moment in which I stopped paying attention to math class and started looking at that poster. The number I is important for solving and predicting a lot of problems in the world, like guessing the trajectory of a hurricane or measuring alternating current. All of these numbers are important because they attempt to place an order on the abstract things that we observe in the world around us. Numbers let us get close enough. But the big problem with numbers is when we forget that close enough part. I can hold two apples in my hands, and if you take one away, I have one left. But if I have two apples in my hand and I take a bite out of one of them, how many apples do I have left? 1.9 apples? What if one of the apples was bigger than the other? What if one's got a worm? What if I own an apple orchard? Are those my apples too? I'm being a pedantic asshole. I know that. But again, the big problem with numbers is how we all imagine them to be more precise and more perfect than they actually are or ever can be. Numbers are not inherent to the universe. They're our inventions. They're the telescopes that look at the sky, not the sky itself. And so, by the time you hear this, I'll have just barely survived a barrage of loved ones asking me what it feels like to be 30, asking me where I'm going to settle down, asking me when they'll see some engagement rings or some children. I've been conditioned to think that this birthday should make me feel profound. I don't feel that profundity, though, because I believe that numbers, especially the big ones, are more than a bit fallible.
Here Be Monsters, the podcast about
2 plus 1 plus 1 half plus 1 quarter plus 1 eighth.
The podcast about
the unknown.
Have you heard any numbers lately, Alan?
Two.
You start 1, 2, 3?
I put 1.
What's after 1?
2.
What's after 2?
8.
What's after 8?
11.
What's after 11?
12.
What's after 12?
11.
What was that one?
It's 11.
Oh, what's after 11?
8.
Which number?
This one.
What number is that?
4.
And what's after 4?
5.
What's after 5? So big numbers, right? I think I've well established that I get pretty angsty about them. But it goes even further than that, because I'm not talking about huge numbers, like the $21 trillion-ish dollars of our national debt. Like, that's incomprehensible. I'm not even talking about really big numbers, like the 1,000 or so species of gut flora living in your body. That's also incomprehensible. The big numbers I'm talking about are numbers like 12.
Yeah.
And 11.
Living.
And maybe even 5.
5!
As small as those numbers seem, they might still be too large for our funny little hominid brains to fully understand. If you can agree with me that numbers are a kind of invention, then I think the next step is to ask, what are numbers an invention of? There are some languages that last only a single lifetime. They are invented by a single person who teaches their language to their family and friends. This is called home signing. Home signing is a way that some people who are deaf communicate. It's a homemade sign language. Now, home signing is sometimes used in conjunction with a formal sign language, but sometimes home signing is a person's one and only language. And in these situations, home signers' syntax and vocabulary are somewhat unique. This offers a really rare insight into how languages develop and what, if anything, is universal among languages. In 2011, psychologists from the University of Chicago and Harvard published a paper about home signing. They were in communication with four people in Nicaragua who had created their own home signing languages. The four participants were all completely and permanently deaf, all held jobs, all had social lives, and all performed well on cognitive tests. But most of them had no formal schooling, nor had they ever learned a formal sign language. And all four of them communicated with the languages that they personally developed and taught to their family and friends. The researchers wanted to know how these home signers perceived numbers, remembered numbers, communicated numbers. And so they showed the home signers varying numbers of objects. They then asked the home signers to tell their friends and families how many objects they'd just seen. Universally, home signers communicated these numbers with raised fingers, one per item, and they were incredibly accurate. At least, they were incredibly accurate, but only up until about the number three. In past three, they became much less accurate. They could usually get close, but they didn't often hit the mark exactly. Eight objects on a table might be retold with seven, eight, or nine fingers, or maybe more or less than that. And as numbers grew bigger, accuracy decreased further. The researchers repeated this test with people who were deaf but used common sign languages. These languages contain discrete signs for individual numbers. The researchers also repeated this test on people who could hear and talk but had no formal education. Both these groups were incredibly accurate with numbers, both big and small. It's possible that our ability to understand most numbers is due to a shared language, a way that we collectively can understand what would otherwise be abstract. You know, one thing that struck me from this small study is that all the home signers chose to use their fingers as their representation of numbers. Finger counting is quite common, but not universal. Most people have 10 fingers, and most people count using a base 10 system. But there's plenty of other cultures that have developed understanding of the world in groups of 20. The Aztecs, the Basque, the Celtic, the Maya, the Muisca, the Inuit, the Yoruba, the Tlingit. There are also languages in Papua New Guinea which use the entire upper body for the purpose of counting, starting at the thumb, then working around the hand, up the arm, through the shoulders, around the head and face, and then down the other side again, ending at the opposite pinky. This system uses 27 counting points and is thus base 27. The Babylonians used a base 60. Now, on the other end of the spectrum, there's a language in the Amazon which only has numbers for one, two, and many. Though I think there's some debate over that. Again, numbers are complicated, and not just if you're counting in base 60, but in our system as well, perhaps especially in the base 10 system, because in base 10, round numbers are so common that I think we get a little shot of dopamine every time we read numbers like 10,000 or 1 million. In reality, I think that millions are rarely more than just delightful bits of linguistic junk food.
Wait, so you told them. You told me this was how many porcelain sunflower seeds?
I said it was 5 million porcelain sunflower seeds.
How many is it really?
It's 50 million.
Earlier I said, what if it's 6 million? And you rolled your eyes at me.
50 million.
50 million. I'm sorry.
Okay, so my mom once bought me a bag of Bugle crispy corn snacks. I was probably like 10 years old, And on the back of the bag, in this like cheeky font, it asked me if I knew how many Bugle Brand corn snacks would have to be stacked on top of each other before they reached the moon. And I remember I read that number and I like reveled in that number. I thought this was like the best fact in the world. But I also instantly forgot it. It was just way too big to remember. And for my whole adult life, I know that the distance to the moon can be measured in bugles. Just can't for the life of me remember what that number is. So, a bugle is 1.5 inches tall. But I have a feeling that stat was related to bugles stacked on top of each other. So, I've made a stack of 10 bugles, and approximately they are 10 inches tall when they're stacked on top of each other. It's not perfect, but that's the number we're going to use. How far is it to the moon?
The moon is 238,900 miles from Earth.
So we need to convert that to feet and then convert that to inches. What is 238,900 times 5,280?
The answer is 1,261,392,000.
What is 1,261,392,000 times 12?
The answer is 15,136,704,000.
Well, I guess that's the answer then. 15,136,704,000. Okay, you want to know how far away the moon actually is. Not in miles, not in bugles, not in football fields. Here's how far away the moon actually is. Imagine we built a highway to the moon. Just a regular highway, nothing special. The speed limit is 60 miles an hour, and that's how fast you drive. So how long does it take you to get to the moon? It takes you 6 months. Or a year if you want to eat and sleep. But 6 months, or a year. That's how far the moon is. The problem with putting a number on the distance to the moon is that it tricks us into thinking that we know more than we actually do. Of course, humanity should know how far it is to the moon so that we can land stuff there and predict the tides, etc. But for you and for me, knowing the distance from the Earth to the moon is probably just about the most boring thing that you can know about it.
I maintain that a poet can pretty much compare the moon to anything.
I listened to a podcast by the writer Ross Sutherland. It's called Imaginary Advice. And he says that you can put any combination of an adjective and a verb after the words the moon, and it will come out sounding right.
And the reader will read back that line and think to themselves, oh yeah, I kind of see what they're getting at.
The moon is a time-lapsed mouth. The moon is an Aztec supermarket. The moon is a Roman floppy disk. The moon is a feline sitcom. The moon is an obvious nickname. The moon is a photocopied lake. The moon
is a billion bugles.
The moon
is your older brother.
The moon
is a menthol candy.
The moon
is a multiple of infinity.
The moon
full of infinity.
The moon
infinity.
The moon
infinity.
It's been a while since we did this, Brian. Okay. We are in second grade and we're in an argument and I say you're wrong times infinity and you say
I'm right times two infinity.
And I say I'm right times 10 infinity. And what do you say?
I'm right times infinity infinity.
I think it was in high school when you actually told me that there were such things as greater and smaller infinities, which doesn't make any sense to me. Like, how can you have a number modify a concept? Can you say, like, I'm twice as happy as I was yesterday? It doesn't really make any sense.
I struggle with this too, like the idea that you can have a infinity that's more or less than another infinity.
So how can you have two or three or infinity times something that we can't even understand?
Well, let's go the other direction with it. Let's go so small that it's incomprehensible. So let's divide the numbers in half. So take like 1 + 1/2 + 1/4 + 1/8 + 1/16. Add those together, you will approach 2. And if you do that an infinite number of times, it's by definition 2. So if you start with 2 + 1 + 1/2 + 1/4 + 1/8, then now you're going to approach 4 instead of 2 as you take that to infinite number of terms. And so it's, I guess, mathematically accepted that if you have infinite number of terms in both of those series, your second series would still be twice the sum of the first. Have you heard the paradox that you can never cross a room because first you have to go half the way across the room, then you have to go another half the way across the room and half the way from, you know, where you are at each successive point. So you can never get to the wall on the other side of the room, which is totally not true, right? And I think that's kind of the leap that you have to make to think about infinity.
Would you say that your life as an adult is more or less affected by infinity than it was when you were in second grade?
I think that the tools that I use in my work probably rely mathematically on the concept of infinity. But as far as my daily life, I think it comes up less frequently in bets and wagers like, you know, I'm right, yeah, times infinity.
Infinity. Infinity.
Infinity, infinity. Infinity, infinity.
I'm going to come on that playground. It was too far away.
Yeah? Well, yeah. It was too far?
Yeah, to go walk on a camelback.
The long and short of it is that I'm pissed off that turning 30 makes me subconsciously want to reflect on my past and plan for my future, start acting my age. It's not that I'm fundamentally opposed to any of these things, it's just that I should be doing those things every day. Don't just save it up for the round numbers, Jeff, because those round numbers are numbers that I can only understand due to my mediocre grasp of English and a lot of ancestors who seem to have had a full complement of fingers. I do think that numbers are wonderful, interesting, and complex, but not in any way something inherent to the universe or created by God. Numbers are creations of us, you know, us, the bags of flesh who hurtle through space on a rock. And so, maybe my 30-year resolution is to be just a little bit more careful with numbers, use them as best I can, and skip them when they're not needed. So if you see me at my next birthday, feel free to say hi. But if you ask me how old I am, just know that I'll respond with, "Beats me, but it's a hell of a lot of bugles." My name is Jeff Entman, and I produce this episode of Here Be Monsters with help from Bethany Denton. Also, big thanks to Alan Entman, Brian Entman, Ariana Nettleman, Ross Sutherland, and a bevy of other people who listen to me complain about big numbers over Christmas and New Year's and my birthday. Over on our website, we have a link to that paper about home signing, which is called Number Without a Language Model. We also have a link to one of my favorite episodes of Imaginary Advice. It's called Regarding the Moon. You can find links on our website, which is hbmpodcast.com. Right now, I'm still looking for your help answering a question that I have. What is something that you find fundamentally immoral, but should be allowed by law? This is a hard question. I mean, it's been a hard question for me. It's been one that I've been really struggling with recently. But I know that there are tons of things that fall into this category. For some reason, all I can come up with, though, right now, in my own mind, is child beauty pageants. They are fundamentally immoral, but I don't think they should be illegal. But what about you? What is something that you are fundamentally opposed to that you also think should be legal? Give us a call, leave us a voicemail. The number is 765-374-5263. Again, that's 765-374-5263. Music on this episode came from The Black Spot and Sarocell. Here Be Monsters is distributed by KCRW. Our senior editor there is Nick White. We get additional support for freelance contributions from KCRW's independent producer project. All right. Thanks for listening. Especially thanks for listening through my sick voice. We'll have more episodes soon. What's up?
Uh-oh.
What happened?
My head bumped.
Oh, your head bumped. I'm sorry, Alan. Does it need help? It looks pretty good to me. The head bonk looks pretty good.